Welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. This week we're going to talk about the few rookie tight end prospects in this class that I think meet the criteria of those we should expect to be more likely to be fantasy relevant players in the NFL. Yes, that was a mouthful. Let's get into it.
Do you have the time to listen to me grind? Take down the few watchers and learn some at once. I'm one of those skeptical of status quo, lazy and to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I grind my Excel sheets, sometimes pour cold water on heat. When the math's not adding up, you said I'm checking out.
Essentially, I think it's really important to establish an idea of what you think of the player outside of other people's opinions before you add that factor in. And outside of the NFL combine or the NFL draft, just what do we think of this player as a baseline? So I'm going to use that baseline probably a little bit too long when it comes to what happens to them in the NFL. Constantly biased about my initial opinion. And so I want that initial opinion to be a fairly sound one based on something that has repeatable and consistent results, at least, so I know the range of outcomes from it. However, in general, over time, my ranks, especially for rookies, but really in the NFL, have started to reflect more a range of outcome perspective than a talent perspective. I don't think there's many people purely ranking talent 1 to 10 or 1 to 20 at this point with rookie evaluation, but they are still out there, and I think that's the baseline of most ranks. However, increasingly, I start to slide towards the other end of the scale. It's not so much I think this guy is the most talented and this guy is the least talented, as much as it is an estimation on the percentage chance they hit a fantasy relevant median in their relevant range of outcomes. And so there is an element to I think this player is this talented or this likely to be this talented in the NFL. But a larger part of it is what is the upside if they hit their median or the upper percentile or the lower percentile range of their outcomes. Ladd McConkey at the wide receiver position is a really interesting example of this year. I think his median outcome is fairly decent in the NFL. He's obviously a pretty good player that people like when they watch, or for the most part, that's too generic. You have to go talk to people who actually watch him. But generically, I find people that actually watch and evaluate tapes think he's a skilled player. And you can see a lot of that in his statistics, in his yards per route run, on his per touch basis efficiency. He's definitely a very capable player, but because of the lack of volume he's co-opted overall, even with Brock Bowers on the team, I typically think he has a lower range of outcomes from a fantasy perspective. But we also know there's a variance around reasonable expectations of what happens when a player goes to the NFL. And so I think Ladd McConkey's median as a good player who doesn't co-opt epic amounts of volume in college is something like a poor man's Tyler Boyd. Not that he plays like it, not that he looks like him on tape, not that he has similar skills or traits or tools, but in terms of fantasy outcomes, I think multiple top 24 seasons would be a relatively above average result from someone with Ladd McConkey's profile, even though he's very clearly a skilled player. How that fits into my ranks isn't about whether I think that is good or bad compared to what Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers look like, but how likely is he to hit that median? Well, a lot of what I find in his profile is substantially about him and fairly repeatable and replicatable, if you like, in the NFL. I think he's still going to be a pretty good player in the NFL, all things considered, at his skill set and how that translates to the NFL. I also think that's remarkably replaceable at the NFL level, so its longevity is a little bit disconcerting. So I model him against previous historical results. I move his rank pretty much based on those factors. I think he's pretty likely to be pretty good in the NFL, but his fantasy upside is somewhat muted, and so someone who has some relevance at being a higher median outcome player is always going to be more interesting to me, even if he's much less likely to hit on that median. I'm more likely to take a chance at someone becoming CeeDee Lamb or becoming Dez Bryant or becoming Justin Jefferson than on a Ladd McConkey, even if I think Ladd McConkey is much more likely to be something like a poor man's Tyler Boyd, in 9 times out of 10, or 7 times out of 10, we run the future out in multiple simulations. What he actually becomes in the NFL might be slightly better, or a lot better than that. Hunter Renfro, Cole Beasley, lots of players that had that median, okay, relevant outcome from their college profile went on to have top 12 seasons, for example, or even multiple years of fantasy and dynasty value. But I don't think that's a reasonable expectation to have at what is most likely to happen for his NFL career, even though I think he looks relatively likely to hit at or close to his median outcome when you put him in a category of players with a similar role, had similar success in college. I actually think I'm bumping him up in that group, specifically because of the team he's playing for and how low volume that passing offense was. Even with Brock Bowers on the team, I think the team's passing offense is pretty slight, and so I don't think his projection or his volume is limited so much by the presence of Brock Bowers, but by the team's scheme and coaching and decisions while he was there, which he has relatively little effect on. But I also think that relatively little effect on has something to say about the player themselves. I think the tippy-top players at the position, even in college, can actually affect teams' plan and coaches' plans. And that's certainly not happening in Ladd McConkey's college career. It should happen for very few, and it happens for even fewer in college before they do it in the NFL. And so it's something hard to hit on in general. But it's kind of an illustrative example of how I'm not just ranking talent 1 to 10 so much as how much I think they're talented and what the median outcome of that player in the NFL is going to be and how likely I think they are going to hit it. And so when it comes to rankings, I no longer think in terms of best to worst so much as chances of hitting on their median outcome and that median outcome's relevance to fantasy football. It also has me thinking a lot about, even though I think it's really important to establish your idea of what you think about a player and let that, if it's done well, baseline understanding of what you think about that player's college career influence your decisions when it gets to the NFL for the first couple of years, especially if they do something significant with a low bar of what's significant in their rookie year, for the next 3 years. But how valuable is the player who is fourth in your rankings? A lot of times I hear players defended, and especially during rookie periods, I think one of the main goals is to sound too negative on too many players unless you have complete conviction not only that they're not going to hit their median, but also that their median is substantially low when you judge their overall college profile. It's really only those players people want to be on the record as being negative for, because they could Hunter Renfro, because it could be James Robinson, because it could be Isaiah Pacheco last year, or some other player that hits well above their weight, what you thought of in college, and frankly, we're all fans and we want these players to succeed. And so we're trying to sound not too negative. So we say things like, he's in my top 12, he's in my top 5, he's in my top 10. But how much does that really matter when it comes to rookie ranks? I said on Twitter, and because I'm me, no one lets me get away with just saying something arbitrary, so I actually had to go and check it out, but I think around about the fourth relevant fantasy player from any positional group is about the borderline max of where a player should be interested in rankings when it comes to, if we got these rankings correct, where does the interest from fantasy come from? Or where does it stop? And I think after player 4 on your rankings, you're really projecting them, if you get the ranks right, to be fairly uninteresting or irrelevant for dynasty and fantasy football. But is that true? So I went back to my database and I listed all positional groups based on points per game for the first 3 years. That's not the best definition, because we'd all argue about the ranking of who is 1, who is 2, and who is 3 from any different positional group from any particular year. But I think it's a fairly good arbitrary definition, primarily because it's the main measurement we use when we test R-squared results. So if we're going to use it for testing models against, I think it's a fair representation of who had the best to worst fantasy outcome over the first 3 years of what points per game did they score during that early part of their career. Now, looking at the list since 2017, there are some notable 4th-ranked players in points per game that clearly aren't bad players in fantasy, and in fact are well above the median. For example, in 2021, Devontae Smith is right now currently the 4th-ranked player at the wide receiver position from 2021 in points per game through his first 3 years. But he's had a top 12 season, I think he's going to have another top 12 season before we're done talking, and he's already been in the top 24 twice and had an average of 13.4 fantasy points per game. I think that's a fairly good rank. So if you're wide receiver 4 and Devontae Smith is in that range of outcomes, I think that's fairly positive. Going to 2020, the 4th ranked QB was Tua Tagovailoa, and the 4th ranked wide receiver in points per game from that season was Brandon Ayuk. In 2019, Deontay Johnson is a 4th ranked wide receiver. In 2018, Christian Kirk, who's actually had a top 12 season and one top 24 season, is the 4th ranked wide receiver in points per game. In 2017, Dalvin Cook is a 4th ranked running back. David Njoku, who's had 3 top 12 seasons at this point, is a 4th ranked tight end. And Chris Godwin is a 4th ranked wide receiver. So clearly being the 4th ranked best player in a class, if we got our ranks correctly, is not the cutoff line. You don't want players only ranked 1 to 3. The 4th ranked player in points per game is actually pretty solid. But let's talk about the fallibility in some of those assumptions as well, and how it might actually be more positive. There might be more players per positional group on occasion that are relevant. In 2017, yes, I said Chris Godwin is a 4th ranked wide receiver in points per game. But by year 3, Kenny Golladay is still the wide receiver 3 from that draft class. And it's pretty clear Chris Godwin was a better draft pick that year from that particular draft class. And so I actually think the 4th ranked wide receiver in 2017 is bad, or at least was a worse range of outcomes than it might look like when you're just looking at Chris Godwin being the 4th ranked wide receiver in 2017. In 2018, like I said, Njoku has 3 top 12 seasons, but I think that overrates his first 3 years and how little that meant to the fact he didn't have a top 12 season in his early years. In 2019, you can actually get really deep in the wide receiver position before you find an irrelevant dynasty or fantasy asset. It's actually wide receiver 6 and 7 are remarkably relevant to dynasty, even this many years out from the 2019 class. Marcus Brown is a 6th ranked wide receiver from 2019, and Hunter Renfrow, who had a top 12 season and a top 24 season, is a 7th ranked wide receiver in points per game. So maybe the first 7 players in everyone's ranks should be relevant. In 2019, that would have been true if we got them all right. And of course, we're not going to get our ranks all right, but I think it's fun to consider what if. Also in 2017, the depth and good relevant players at the running back position is well known. And stupidly good. Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, especially through the first few years of his career, obviously. Dalvin Cook, Leonard Fournette, Chris Carson had multiple top 24 seasons, 3 of them in fact. Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon, James Conner, and then Marlon Mack, who at least had 4 top 24 seasons. And you've even got Tariq Cohen, who had a top 24 season. Jamal Williams, who was still relevant last year. 2017 for running backs was insanely good. And it's actually the best year for any positional group ever. 2014 wide receivers can suck it compared to 2017 running backs. Now, speaking of wide receivers, in 2021, wide receivers are similarly impressive to 2017 running backs, or at least relatively so. In fact, if you want more top 24 seasons versus top 12 seasons, 2020 wide receivers are actually pretty deep. But to stick with the 2021 class, the best year on record since 2014, Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith. You've even got Nico Collins, who went off for a top 12 season last year. And below that, Elijah Moore, who still had more in-and-out dynasty relevance, at least for the first couple of years of his career, than that probably says. Chetarius Atwell, or Tutu Atwell, also had a lot of significance for the first part of 2023. Considering the depth and utility of the other positions, in 2018 we actually get about 4 relevant tight ends from that one class. And it's probably a little undernoted, mostly because we don't care about it. if we consider players outside the first 3 years, and I think that's actually specifically relevant for tight ends, who tend to have a longer and stranger arc to relevance in Fantasy and Dynasty, we actually have four players who have multiple top 24 seasons, which doesn't matter, but also multiple top 12 seasons. Mark Andrews, Dallas Goedert, Mike Gesicki, and, if we look outside the first 3 years of their career, Dalton Schultz has four top 12 seasons. Even Hayden Hurst had one top 12 season technically, though it was never really relevant. Now, 2018 tight ends aren't overly relevant like 2021 wide receivers or 2017 running backs, but it does point out that different positional groups can kick the average to the curb in a particularly good draft class for that position. It's also worth noting that I'm just using 2022 to 2017 to keep it simple, readable and tweetable as it were, but there's a lot deeper depth to the research you could do on this particular idea, and I actually have posted that, or you could check out my database anyway if you want to see how deep the rabbit hole goes on this whole idea. But the 2022 class being included in that sample is a little wild, because we actually have four wide receivers, maybe five or six, that are currently relevant to our perspective moving forward. You've got Kyren Williams, who finally paid off last year with his first relevant season and a top 12 finish. Breece Hall has finished in the top 12, obviously. Rashad White has a top 12 season now, so does James Cook. But you've also got players like Kenneth Walker, who had two top 24 seasons to this point in his career, and we're probably not done writing that story either. Isaiah Pacheco had a top 24 season last year, and there's probably a little more in the tank in certain terms of relevance to fantasy. Brian Robinson, a lot of people have got hopes on, and Damian Pierce had a relatively good rookie season in terms of overall outcome, even though if it hasn't paid off after that. So 2022 is not yet set, and yet I'm including in the sample, but still. If I zoom out, four still isn't a bad cutoff to how many players are relevant for dynasty or fantasy football in general. If you look at players with top 12 seasons, the average at running back and wide receiver is just under four since 2000. 3.7 running backs have at least one top 12 season, and 3.9 wide receivers have at least one top 12 season. Specifically, we're talking about tight ends today, so I'll point out that 3.3 tight ends typically have a top 12 season from any different draft class when you look at the average. What's more, that is mostly true for most seasons. It's not like it varies a lot and the average is coming out at an unrealistic number. We typically see about three running backs, three wide receivers, and three tight ends flirt or score top 12 seasons in most draft classes. However, yeah, a really good draft class or a great year like 2017 for running back or 2018 for tight end or 2021 for wide receiver can really kick that number to the curb. Any positional group can beat the four relevant players cutoff, but it's not common. Wide receiver does tend to run a little deeper most years. Even when you look at the average, you'll see more wide receivers relevant deeper down, 1, 2, and 3, and 4. Remember that Chris Godwin might be the wide receiver 4 in points per game, and Kenny Golladay is actually the wide receiver 4 that year. But Kenny Golladay had two top 24 seasons, and while it feels like a miss now, at the time, those were two viable, usable fantasy seasons from a rookie pick. And so it counted. So I think 4 plus at wide receiver is reasonable, but it's also fairly reasonable to be cranky or less optimistic about the player who finishes beyond that point in overall points per game through the first 3 years. They're less likely to be any kind of fantasy relevant, although the dynasty arcs and ups and downs of players are a different story slightly, because we can quite often put value in players that don't even hit these marks. Elijah Moore, who I mentioned in the previous write-up of this here history, has had ups and downs inside the top 24 in dynasty ranks, but never finished close to it in the NFL for fantasy. If you can bear with me for just a little bit longer on this subject, we can also zoom in a little bit more, which is one of the areas I do actually like to zoom in instead of zooming out. And if we consider individual players, in terms of the players we get from any particular draft class at any particular position, that actually score more than one top 12 season, the boundary I think we should mostly be looking at for fantasy relevance in terms of scoring points anyway. Two is actually a more reasonable average. We actually get 1.5 quarterbacks on average that have at least two top 12 seasons from any particular draft class. two running backs, two wide receivers, and two tight ends. And again, these averages aren't high and low very often. It's pretty consistently just over or just below two. Most draft classes are pretty true to this average, although those great years or those terrible years at one positional group or another do create an over and under. Most years do create at least two players, but relatively rarely create more than two players with multiple top 12 seasons at any particular positional group. And again, wide receiver tends to run a little deeper, but running back is a little bit more consistent about producing at least two. Tight ends, it might be a little deeper number than two. The average is lying to us a little bit there, because since 2019, those tight ends really haven't started to dominate the top 12 as the peak and trough of development arcs from their career year hasn't really peaked and troughed. In other words, we're about to see the end of one era of tight ends and the beginning of another, and that average from 2019 to 2023 is about to come up. But right now, we only have one player from 2019 and one player from 2020 who have scored at least one top 12 season, and then, of course, one from 2023 most recently. So I actually think our four cutoff is actually optimistic, if anything, if you're looking at an individual basis when looking at individual players. Expecting four players to have multiple top 12 seasons is actually unrealistic when you look at an individual draft class. Although multiple top 24 is much more realistic, and multiple top 24 value seasons at wide receiver and running back, or top 12 at quarterback and tight end, is very realistic. But actual outcome, I think getting two players from any particular position with multiple years actually finishing in the top 12, two is probably a better number than four. Now, having said all that, I do think it's reasonable to have ranks that go well past the number two and four for rookies, because we're trying to establish a baseline understanding of what we think of this player, and that can and should, if we do it right, influence our opinion on what they do in the NFL for the first couple of years. And so I think it's really important to establish an idea outside the NFL combine, outside the NFL draft, outside of what other people that we respect or don't respect in the quote-unquote industry think of these players for ourselves. And so today I'm going to run through the tight end ranks that I have. And you can see my notes and see my ranks on my Patreon or on that rank sheet that I post all the time, anytime. But I thought I'd just run through the first, how many tight ends do I have ranked? I've looked at more, but so far I've only put out 9 different tight end ranks from the 2024 class. And remembering that tight ends have a slightly longer career arc, and David Njoku did almost nothing for the first 3 career years and has multiple top 12 seasons, and that top 12 seasons are relatively unexciting at the tight end position, considering David Njoku has 3 of them. With all that considered, here's where I roughly am on the 2024 rookie class and my rankings and too long didn't read versions of my profile notes on them. So number one in the class overall, and I actually think he's a top tier prospect who should be considered in the top 5 of any particular rookie draft this year, that's how significant I think his profile is Brock Bowers. He was a central part of Georgia's receiving production and put up 3 seasons over 3.5 receiving yards per team pass attempt, which is the average for hits in the NFL to have a top 12 season. He had over 9 yards after catch per reception. It's actually a really impressive mark. Like, yards after catch is one of those things we use to give us a gauge of how dynamic a player is as a receiver once they get the ball in their hands. But Brock Bowers' yards after catch numbers are so striking, I've basically just been filtering different lists of that he tops or rates. For example, all prospects at the wide receiver and tight end position, since we have data on yards after catch, which I think is 2015, there are only 2 players to enter the NFL with over 2,000 receiving yards and over 8 yards after catch for their career length in college. And that's Deebo Samuels and Brock Bowers. How relevant is that list? I don't know. But isn't that a really weird list to be a part of? And that's Brock Bowers. He's incredibly dynamic after the catch. Every year he's phenomenally productive after he gets the ball in his hands. And he's getting the ball in his hands an awful lot for Georgia. He's a dynamic player who has way more after the catch than the average wide receiver. And he's doing it at a wide receiver volume for over 3 years at a very impressive conference. If I sort tight end prospects in the database, Brock Bowers comes in 12th overall in my pre-draft model score, which is pretty good. However, my model score is also using weight-adjusted speed score, because the position is the only one where size and athleticism has some meaning, mostly because so few things have any meaning the weight-adjusted speed score is getting into the conversation. So size-adjusted athleticism actually matters at tight ends. So before the combine, or when someone like Brock Bowers doesn't run a 40 time, it actually takes the average of top three round prospects, which is around about 100. Now players who hit in the top 12 for the tight end position tend to average about 105 weight-adjusted speed score. So I'm actually giving him a below-average speed score for him to rank in the top 12 in my pre-draft model. Now, that's particularly relevant because of the top 12 players in my pre-draft model in my database, only 6 are partial to outright misses, which I know is half the sample, which is why models suck. By the way, it's got a great R-squared score. It doesn't matter. All relied, however, on above-average weight-adjusted speed scores to get in the top 12 if I break down where their model score comes from. So McCall Pruitt and Caleb Wilson have weight-adjusted speed scores 120 or over, and most are averaging, of the top 12 misses, 107. And so they are getting into the top 12 in my database for my pre-draft model, primarily because of the weight-adjusted speed score. Brock Bowers is getting inside the top 12 despite a below-average weight-adjusted speed score because he didn't run a 40 time. That, I'm not sure this is doing it justice. So in other words, Brock Bowers is a top 12 and isn't overly dependent on his weight-adjusted speed score. So his upside is actually undersold by that top 12 rank since forever. If I model him as a wide receiver in this year's class, he scores second only to Marvin Harrison Jr., using his own statistics and not adjusting them for the wide receiver position. If he was entering the NFL as a wide receiver, the only profile I would consider above him is Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. He's a top 5 draft pick in Superflex for Dynasty, minimum, and to be honest, I think that's a steal. My second and distinctly different rank, it's the second tight end, but it's a separate tier, and we've got three or four players who don't exist, of separation between him and Brock Bowers, but it's Jatavion Sanders. In another class, Sanders could well be the tight end one, and a more impressive tight end one than most classes. However, he wouldn't be an easy first round pick in that class, because he's a tight end. He was a featured receiver, getting 17% and 14% of the targets, and the third highest targeted player on average for his team, featuring in the target vacuum that was Xavier Worthy. His receiving yards per team pass attempt is 1.5, the average of top 12 hits, as I mentioned earlier. And in his best season, he added 6.5 yards after catch per reception for his career total, which is actually a really good mark if you didn't have Brock Bowers sitting right next to him being historically great at that particular statistic. Normally, that would be a very dynamic mark. His weight-adjusted speed score is slightly below average with a 4.6 40 time, but that's because he's also slightly undersized. Most tight ends this year especially aren't beating my 250 and 6.3 average, and so the weight-adjusted speed score isn't particularly impressive for most of them. I don't fret the 40 too much. His weight-adjusted athleticism is fine because we don't suffer from number go green analysis here, but it is worth noting that at the one position that it matters, Sanders and most tight ends that I'm going to talk about here are slightly undersized, so they all have slightly muted weight-adjusted speed scores that is getting included in the initial pre-draft model score. Another tier, and the third-ranked tight end player that I've got, is Cade Stover. I dither between him, Sanott, and Bell. I've just put them all in a similar tier, and honestly, there isn't much separating all three of them. I like all three pretty much the same, but ranks have to have a linear nature, and so I put Stover third overall. It took me a while to appreciate Stover's potential, since he only played more than 8 games in his final 2 seasons, at age 22 and 23, which, since I'm used to profiling wide receivers more than tight ends, that's normally a little bit of a concern. He played at Ohio State, and I don't think it's overly concerning for a tight end, at least, but it is worth noting. He did have over 2 yards per route run in his final season, and so far, through the limited sample of data and relative players in the NFL, because very few have hit since we've had that data, You have to run tests pretty well against overall outcomes in the NFL. I think it's going to become back in line receiving yards per team pass attempt when we get a larger sample of hits, because we only have yards per route run since 2015 or so, and relatively few great tight ends have come out since that time, and it's probably going to look more like receiving yards per team pass attempt over time, but right now yards per route run models really well, and he has over 2 yards per route run, which is kind of the baseline medium for positive outcomes in the NFL. He's also over the average for yards after catch per reception, offering that dynamism as a receiver that we like to see from tight ends in general, although it isn't essential. Essentially, those two things, the yards per route run and yards after catch per reception, are decorative measures to a profile in general, and the reason he hits my third tier, and I'm a little less excited about him than Sanders or Bowers, is that for me, it is not rooted in volume. Even in that age 22 and 23 season, he only had about 12 and 13% of the targets. It was 0.9 and 1.4 receiving yards per team pass attempt, which is below average for hits, but also just below average for a significant receiver on a college team. It isn't great, but it isn't bad either, and when you've got this decorative measure of yards per route run and yards after catch per reception, I'm willing to believe there's slightly more to what the player can do versus what he was able to do in his situation in college. It's also true that he's averaging 130 QB targeted rating, which doesn't have good R-squared score, but does speak to more of how he's doing better on a per-touch basis than he's doing in terms of his overall role for that offense, and since it's tight end, I'm able to squint a little bit. He also has above-average hands. That's what really separated, or that's really how I came up with the difference between him, Sanott, and Bell. He caught 77% of his targets in college, which is above average for the ADOT he was running at in college. ADOTs in college for tight ends tend to be relatively similar, but I included that variable just to be safe. Ben Sanott, my 4th-ranked tight end, is the first guy in my 2024 tight end ranks currently hitting over the 250-pound mark, which we normally like to see from tight ends. And his receiving numbers are decent on a receiving yards per team pass attempt and also a yards per route run basis. He has at least one season over 1.6 receiving yards per team pass attempt and 2 yards per route run. One of my bigger questions about him is his hands. He played in the slot a lot less often than most prospects, an average of 33% for most prospects, which means he played on the outside a little bit more. For the tight end position, that's a little curious, but still, his catch rate of 67 and 65% still place him about 2.5% below average for tight ends playing at that kind of ADOT. Despite being over 250 pounds and under a 4.7, his weight-adjusted speed score is still somewhat muted for the tight end position, around 105, and the average for hits is around 107. But remember, let's not go green it. It's relatively fine. His size-adjusted athleticism is good, as it is the case for most of these prospects this year. But it does leave real questions for his ability to elevate his, which seems to be a more dynamic receiving role in college compared to most players, and how that can elevate to the NFL level. Having said that, his final season, over 18% of targets, 2 yards per route run, and 1.5 receiving yards per team pass attempt, is a good best season to take with him into the NFL as a prospect, and leaves him with top 12 fantasy potential in the NFL, as everyone in my third tier should have. My 5th-ranked tight end this year is Jaheim Bell. Very secure hands with over 70 and 80% catch rate in both of his years, despite running a slightly higher ADOT and lower slot score than most tight ends. However, despite a solid receiving role, 11% of targets his first year at South Carolina, followed by 12% in his final season at Florida State, and over 20 targets per route run in each of those seasons. He's been targeted at a fairly high rate when he's on the field, in other words, despite his target share not being particularly high. His team relative volume at the position seems to tell a story of a weapon rather than a featured offensive piece. Like that targets per route run rate, he's being targeted aggressively when he's on the field, but he's not being put on the field to be targeted aggressively very often, in other words. 11% targets, 20% targets per run, that kind of tells the story. While a tight end is not a different kind of wide receiver, and I want to make that very clear, we shouldn't be performing the same process blocks, size, these things matter at the position, which they pretty much don't at the wide receiver position in my mind. Clearly not a tight end that caused a focus of targets in college, and that's somewhat concerning to me. He had a height of 1.3 receiving yards per team pass attempt, which is significantly below the average for hits, and his final season falling below 1.3 to 1.1, which is borderline relevant. Now again, being a featured receiver in college isn't the single or isn't our singular focus of tight end prospect evaluation for a good tight end in fantasy. But it does, to me, suggest a limited upside, especially for the first few years, in his range of outcomes, despite a dynamic ability after the catch, since he's the only player in several draft classes to have 9 yards after catch per reception outside of Brock Bowers. He's also, again, undersized for position at 240 pounds, and that's relatively slight at 6 foot 3 inches, so being below 240, below 250, but yet at the 6.3 height means he's also a little slender for the position in terms of his overall build, but you know, we take those. Now, my fourth tier at the position is just players I find remarkably interesting, but have some notable warts. We're going to have to see what the NFL thinks of them, and definitely expect a slower development in terms of their relevance for fantasy, if they ever catch relevance for fantasy. My sixth ranked tight end right now, and I had him at 3 for a while, because I was particularly interested, but when breaking down his season in more depth, I've moved him down to this fourth tier of very interesting, but not likely prospects. Standing 6 foot 4 inches tall and weighing 260 pounds, Brevin Span Ford, as far as I know, is only really on my radar. I haven't heard his name from anyone else yet, at least. But because my radar is dysfunctional and goes looking for trouble specifically, you should bear that in mind. He played 5 years for the Big Ten, for Minnesota in the Big Ten, and really only did anything of note in his final 3 years. From ages 21 to 23. Barely 0.4% of players are drafted from Minnesota at any position, by the way, so while the Big Ten might sound good, Minnesota should sound bad. Still, the 11%, 21%, and 16% target share, as well as the 1.1, 1.7, and disappointingly 0.7 receiving yards per team pass attempt through those last 3 years do give me some interest in his receiving ability as he elevates to the NFL at that height and at that weight in a draft class which is a little undersized. He also has 2 years over 2 yards per route run and 6.1 yards after catch per reception. Again, they're more cherries on top of a profile right now, in my opinion, but they're both significant marks in terms of their dynamism and their ability as a receiver. He took a notable last year dip in volume. Like I said, his receiving yards per team pass attempt jumped below 1, which is never great. But he did play in a slot a little less often than you'd expect, than an average prospect being drafted in the first 3 rounds at least. And yet always had an ADOT under 8. With a 4.7740 and a 7.383 cone, he's not the standard definition of a size-adjusted athletic freak, but he's definitely a decent size-adjusted athlete. And as a deeper prospect in the class, that combined with a decent or interesting receiving history of production makes him interesting. Now, my 7th ranked player could easily be ranked above him. The only question I really have, Span Ford could be ranked above Span Ford, is can you call a tight end an Iowa tight end if they only got 32% of their career targets in Iowa? Eric Orr, don't let the tag fool you. He's listed as an Iowa tight end, but he didn't really come from tight end U for most of his career. He only played for Iowa in his final season, where, again, 32% of his targets for his career total. He had an okay, not great year at Iowa, with a great target share of 19%, but a below average 0.8 receiving yards per team pass attempt. His yards per route run and yards after catch numbers per reception are good, however, so he has those cherries on top. And it's interesting that Iowa found him interesting enough that they brought him in for 2023, in my opinion. His size easily makes him potentially relevant to fantasy with this college profile at 6'4" and 252 pounds. Again, He's like one of three players I found to beat those two standard marks for what size a tight end quote-unquote should be. I don't have a 40 time for him, however, so no weight adjusted speed score, and he's just taking the average in the model. Now, on the opposite end of that scale, Theo Johnson is going to be ranked much more highly in most people's ranks, I think, but I think his receiving production easily puts him into the fourth tier over here, despite the fact that his combine performance is going to put him in the first or second tier for most other people. Frankly, I am weighting in how big and athletic he is at the combine by putting him here. Brevin Spanford, Eric Orr are both size-adjusted athletes, although not as impressively so, but their receiving production is definitely more impressive. So I'm putting them in a tier with much better receiving or much more impressive receiving profiles, specifically because of his weight-adjusted athleticism, just before anyone gets mad at me. Now, when adjusted for size, the 6 foot 6 inch tight end at 259 pounds, running a 4.5940, should likely be of interest to fantasy and the NFL. Although it's not as impressive as it might seem, it's just particularly stand out from this year's class. However, having never broke a single yard in receiving yards per team pass attempt, and is below average in both yards after catch per reception and yards per out run, mean that I'm slightly less enamored with him than you might think or expect. And he doesn't hit a lot of my boxes when it comes to establishing the ability to be a receiving weapon or to garner volume in the receiving game at the position. My ninth and final ranked tight end for this season is called Austin Stonger. I don't know. S-T-O-G-N-E-R. You should really look up his injury for yourself, because there's a really in-depth story there, and one I definitely think you should pay attention to, because I care about players, and I think this is a really interesting story that we should be aware of. But too long didn't read, it means his profile is slightly difficult to understand. He suffered a bad injury, just a quick version, in his first season, or at the very end of his first season, which led to an infection, which led to a harrowing recovery story, and leaves, still 3 years out from that event, questions about his health. And he played 3 years in college after that point, and still we have to wonder if he ever made it back to his full form. His first season is noticeably different in terms of receiving production than the following three, so that bears out that it was injury-dependent, if you know what I mean. In fact, his first season is spectacularly impressive and promising. In terms of receiving role, he got 14% of the targets, 1 point run receiving yards per team pass attempt, and over 2 yards per route run. Every year after that, and after his injury, looks mediocre, bad, and pedestrian at best. But the question remains, could that former trajectory of his first season be returned to, or be the actual truth? And his injury and then the team's subsequent decisions on him from that point be somewhat of a red herring? If the NFL or anyone in the NFL thinks he's worth that shot, he might be a lot more interesting than my rank and his current draft interest suggests. But he's definitely worth checking out, and that story's definitely worth reading into, just to know more about what players go through trying to make it in this game, if nothing else. And like I say, that first year is pretty impressive and worth looking at to get an idea of what a good, impressive first year is for a tight end from that conference, from that team, or just in general. Okay, that's about all I have time for this week. If you'd like to check out my data from all prospects in forever, it's obviously pinned to my Twitter timeline, it's pinned to my Patreon timeline. It is free, not just to see and download and use, but no, those are all the things. Those are all the things it could be useful for. You do go through my Patreon, because that's where I have the link. But again, just click on the link and it's there just as anyone else. There's never going to be money charged for anything I do with the college database. And all the prospects are there. If you're interested in my ranks outside of this podcast, come talk to me on the Dynasty Grind every Wednesday. I do have a ranking sheet with all my notes and historical notes from prospects, at least, on it. That is technically behind the Patreon timeline, the Patreon paywall. But yeah, you can also just ask me if you're interested, and I'll happily share whatever you're interested in. Outside of that, thanks very much for listening to The Crossroads once again, one more time, and I will talk to you again next week. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the tape, going Nape on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, Jake got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the tape, going Nape on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the tape, going Nape on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.